Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with a valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Hey, welcome everybody. This is Ask the Vets here on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. My name is Karen Watts, also known as Karen at PetOfTheDay.com or Karen at DogOfTheDay.com or Karen at CatOfTheDay.com. You know, we know some of you are dog people, some of you are cat people, and some of you are anything but human people. So welcome. And we have today as our veterinarians on call, we have Dr. Carol Osborne and Dr. Don Canfer.
Hey, thank you. Welcome.
Glad to have you both. Now, my first question today comes from Tracy in Santa Clara, California. Some of my cats have dandruff. How can I help prevent this or at least help to clear it up? Both of my long-haired male cats, Alani and Blaze, have some white flakes. They just turned 3 on April 30th, and they look like they're probably Maine Coon mixes. As you might guess, they're rescues, so there's no pedigree involved. They currently only eat dry, grain-free cat food, and they get some chicken broth every night. I wish I could feed them canned food, she says, but every time I've tried to give them some, they end up getting diarrhea. They had Giardia as kittens before I adopted them, so maybe this scarred their intestinal tract. Any ideas what I can do?
Well, that is a good question because I have my own personal cat that suffers from the same malady. In my experience, it always seems to be the medium or longer haired cats, particularly black and white ones for some reason. I don't know. There might be something genetic there. I don't think it's dietary because you can have multiple cats in the household. They're all eating the same food and one cat will have it and the others don't. It's easy to remedy. I treat my cat. I bathe her periodically with an ethyl lactate-based shampoo. The product is called Ediderm, but there's others. It's a common ingredient in seborrheic shampoos. And that gets rid of all the dandruff and keeps her nice and clean, dry coat for several weeks until the problem returns. Some veterinarians promote the use of zinc supplements, sometimes corn oil, some of your vegetable oils, like particularly corn oil, safflower seed oil can sometimes help with the seborrhea. Years ago, there used to be a product called FA supplement, called fatty acid supplement, that had all of these things incorporated, made by the old, used to be Pfizer, and you added a little squirt cap on it. You could put so many squirts in the animal's food according to their size, and that also seemed to help. But I have never discovered a permanent cure. You do want to perhaps have the animal checked, rule out, make sure we don't have low thyroid conditions or some other medical condition that might be underlying it. But in an otherwise normal cat, all you can do is control it. I've never found a cure for it.
Okay. Dr. Carol, did you have anything to add? Well, I
have lost Dr. Carol. Let me, okay.
Well, in any case, I know both Alani and Blaze recently had haircuts. So maybe that will help. If they have a bath now, that may help. And as the hair grows in, maybe she'll have to give them a bath again. But our next question I have. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say cutting the hair would probably help if you are using medicated shampoo. The shorter the hair, the better you can work the shampoo into the skin surface.
Right. They both just got quote-unquote lion cuts. So, you know, their faces are still nice and fluffy, but their bodies are sleek. Dr. Carol, did you have anything to add on dandruff in kitty cats? Okay, we will just move right ahead. My next question is actually a dog question, and this is from Courtney in Arkansas. She has her dog Towser. He is a white dog, and our best guess is he is an American bulldog, boxer-ish mix. You know, like a lot of rescue animals, there's a mystery in there. Anyway, Towser's face burns if he is outside in the sun all day, so I've been looking into sunscreens that I could apply around his nose and eyes. I'm concerned about all the chemicals that are in most sunscreens you see on store shelves. I've heard that baby sunscreen is fine, but I also know a lot of sunscreens have zinc oxide in them, which is, from what she understands, toxic for dogs to ingest. Since it would be near his mouth and he might lick some off, should I be concerned, or is it not a significant amount to harm him?
Well, depending on how much he licks, but yeah, you know, zinc oxide ointments are the most effective sunblocks. That's why you see all the lifeguards, you know, putting it on their noses. However, yeah, animals that can ingest it, remember, you know, dogs and cats are not all that big in relation to the body size and how much they can lick off. So I would probably avoid it. Dogs, fortunately, are not affected by the aminobenzoic acids like cats are. So you can, you know, you can use anything with PABIT in it, I guess, would be safe for them. Obviously, the best thing to do, keep him out of the sun. Don't let him out during the higher, higher sun times of the day. For humans, they usually say between 10 and 2, I believe. I don't know what state she lives in, if I didn't catch that.
She's in Arkansas, and, you know, even up here in Massachusetts, where we get less sun than they do in Arkansas, or you in Florida, I am one of those pale children, even though I'm now an adult, and it's between 10 and 2, stay out of the sun. Now, Dr. Carroll, did you have anything you wanted to add? I guess we're still not getting sound with Dr. Carroll.
Technical issue here. Hopefully we'll get that resolved in just
That's right. Now, I wanted to continue on with, are all white or light-colored pets vulnerable to sunlight? And we can probably continue this to the next sentence because I have a lot of questions about that. Like I said, I am a person who sunburns easily. I've been pale ever since I was a child. And if you look at those charts in doctor's offices for risk factors for skin cancer, you know, I'm there. Now, do all white or light-colored pets, are they all more sensitive to sunlight? I know that some white horses can get eye cancer. And are white cats also vulnerable to sunlight more than black cats?
Yes, all white animals are. The lack of pigmentation allows the ultraviolet rays of the sun, you know, to penetrate into the deeper skin layers. And, of course, you get the genetic changes and then cancer ensues. We here in Florida, you know, we crop a lot of ears on white cats. We crop a lot of ears on dogs. And I've even had to do it on horses as well.
You know, we are just about out of time for this segment, and we've just gotten Dr. Carroll back. We will be right back with more Ask the Vets on All Paws Pet Talk, talking about, now that it's getting toward warmer weather, sun and your pets, black pets, white pets, and all pets. We'll be right back with more.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be healthy goo healthy.
Your pet may be sick and not even know it. Your pet may appear healthy, but a vast majority of healthy-looking pets are actually infected with parasites and other infections that do not manifest themselves until they overwhelm the pet and the pet finally appears sick. Sometimes, by then, it is too late. To find out more about how you can help your pet to stay healthy, then go to www.quantumvetcare.com. That's www.quantumvetcare.com. www.quantumvetcare.com.
Welcome back to All Paws Pet Talk. We were just talking about white and light-colored pets and sunlight. I know, Dr. Carroll, did you have something you wanted to add?
Absolutely. In any pet, be it a dog or a cat, that's white or has a light-colored skin, certainly they have less melatonin, the pigment that protects us from ultraviolet rays. So their exposure to the sunlight should obviously be limited. Things that you can do is you can get a little cover-up. They've got all kinds of great light, like second skins, lycra body cover-ups that you can put on your pet. Avoiding the human sunscreen products, in particular, those with the benzoyl peroxide, particularly on cats, they lick it off. The zinc oxide is toxic, potentially destroys red blood cells, which can result in anemia. Benzocaine sprays and creams are very soothing to sunburned and irritated skin, but again, toxic to kitties, so steer clear. What can you use to cool that skin down? Herbal remedies would include witch hazel, which cools and soothes sunburned skin. You can apply the lotion with a cotton ball about 4 times a day. Remember that aloe vera gel is very soothing as well as moisturizing to sunburned areas of skin. Again, it can be applied 3 to 4 times daily. And remember that the areas exposed, especially the tips of the ears, the nose, the lips, and the eyelids, are particularly sensitive to the sun. They'll get irritated, thickened, and a bit crusty. Those sores can actually open and become infected. So use preventative products. Even if you have an indoor cat that has a sunny spot in your living room, he or she enjoys sunbathing in, limit that time in the sun so as to avoid squamous cell carcinoma and other skin cancers prevalent in cats.
Now, you were saying, Dr. Don, that in Florida you end up cropping some ears on, is that on horses and dogs?
Yes, we've done it in a variety of species. And as Dr. Osborne was just saying, yes, it's due to cancerous changes in the that begins on the margins. And if you catch it early, removing the affected margins kind of make cats look like little Scottish fold cats, you know, with shortened ears. And it is curative, but the hard part, as Dr. Osborne also just said, is keeping them from returning to the sun. We can remove the skin cancers or the early actinic changes, you know, when they first appear, and that will prevent the cancer from forming or spreading. But if the owners continue to allow the animals to expose themselves to the skin, it's just going to return on the new skin margins. Another little trick we do here in a lot of the white-nosed dogs is we will tattoo them. And you can do that in the ears, too. It's expensive because it's time-consuming, but you get, and it has to be done under anesthesia. But tattooing them, kind of like the permanent eyeliner they put on women, the tattoo ink will act as a natural sunblock and protect the skin from further damage.
Huh. I had never heard of that. That's really interesting.
And now, as far as these squamous cell carcinomas, which Dr. Camphor referred to as sometimes having to amputate or remove the tip of the ear. These also can occur actually on the eyelids, in which case cryosurgery or freezing is used to remove the cancerous cells.
Oh, yuck. So all the pale puppies and ponies and should be like me and hide from the sun during the day, I guess. Now, what about small animals like guinea pigs or rats? I know someone with rats who like to, you know, go over to the sunny part of the cage in the afternoon and take a nap there. Though most rats that I've experienced like to hide from the sun. Is that rat going to be in trouble? He's mostly white, so.
Yeah, all animals that lack melatonin or pigment to their skin are going to be more susceptible to the sun's rays than individuals two- or four-legged that have a dark or a pigmented skin, if you will.
Okay, you know, that was just something I wanted to get out there because I know that a lot of people are, especially those of us, Dr. Carroll and I, who are in the more northern areas, now that the weather is getting warmer and there's lots of sunlight, you know, we like to get out and enjoy it. But just, I guess, not in the heat of the day as summer goes on. Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to make a point for little Courtney in Arkansas. She had a question about vitamin D and whether pets need it or they make it in the sunlight. Certainly sunlight is a great source of vitamin D. Remember that vitamin D3, which is cholecalciferol, is a wonderful vitamin when used properly. Vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin, which means that unlike water-soluble vitamins, it is stored in the body, it is not eliminated daily, and it can accumulate within the body, leading to toxic levels. The risk of excess vitamin D is significant in that it causes an excess of calcium in the blood, which leads to acute kidney failure and can precipitate lymphoma cancer. So when it comes to vitamin D or any of your fat-soluble vitamins, including vitamins A, D, E, and K, talk to your veterinarian. Be very careful that you don't run into an overdose situation.
Yeah, in fact, now that you mentioned it, a lot of people don't know all the newer rat poisons now are actually vitamin D based. That's how you kill the rats, is by overdosing them on vitamin D. There is a synthetic vitamin D, but that is the principle behind most of the newer rat poisons, which are no longer anticoagulants.
Well, that's a great point, Dr. Don, and I was not aware of that. So thank you for informing me.
Yes, and now we know that because I've always been a pale person, and friends of mine who, you know, are Italian and tan say, well, maybe you don't get enough vitamin D and you should be out in the sun more. And I try to explain to them that sunburns hurt. If I have to, I'll swallow my vitamin D. So it's interesting to know about vitamin D in pets as well. You know, we start to talking. And is there also with horses, I know you mentioned the tips of ears. I have heard that some blue-eyed horses can get in trouble in the sun with cancers in their eye. Is that common?
Yes, it is. They get them on the eyelids. They get them on the third eyelids or the membranes around the eye. We have had to remove, unfortunately, many, many eyes out of many, many horses, cows as well here in Florida. It's a problem out west as well, out in the more arid desert areas, because the bare ground reflects a lot of the sunlight back up into their faces, much like on us when we go to the beach. So it's a problem in a lot of parts of the country, and the only cure for it, if caught earlier, is removing the eye and or the tissues around the eye. And they'll get it on their muzzles and other, you know, unhaired parts of the body as well.
You know, with respect to with respect to protecting your pet's eyes, if it's a dog that you might be worried about, remember they've got that great product called Doggles, fashionable eyewear for the sensitive-minded canine. But it is a great product. They do protect the eyes. They have UV protection, flexible frames, and the whole nine yards. So that's another option, although they don't have Doggles available for cats quite yet.
and for horses down here in Florida, you know, fly masks are a very popular item, particularly in the summer months. Not only make flies away, but they block the sunlight from the sensitive areas of the face. And if you do have a horse, that's an excellent option as well.
Yeah, even in the big show jumping horses, when they're in actual competition, they use yarn and they just weave them. They actually look kind of neat, and then they just go right over the ears and right over the forehead, and then the bridle just goes on top of it. So they look kind of neat, and they protect your horse and keep the flies away from the eyes and ears at the same time.
And I've seen them match the rider's, you know, jacket color. So everyone is not only stylish and happy, but well protected. Folks, we are running out of time for this segment. We will be right back with more of All Paws Pet Talk, Ask the Vet.
As a dog owner, you know that dogs can eat just about anything. But when food becomes a health troublemaker, or your animal has been on antibiotics or heavy meds, or GI issues set in, your animal's gut may be out of balance and needs Goo Gut Rescue. Goo Gut Rescue is 100% natural and veterinarian prebiotic and probiotic formulated to rescue your animal's gut from bad bug dominance. Remember, your dog's total health begins with gut health. Don't delay. Visit GooGutRescue.com.
Is your pet eating too fast? Well, we have the healthy solution. IQ is the perfect solution to help your cats and dogs lead a better life. With their new patented design, their bowl will make your dog and cat live a culinary experience by having them eat like nature intended. Having to play with their food not only reduces the chance that they have weight problems, but will also let them enjoy the chase. like they would in nature. Designed by a veterinarian technician, this bowl was acclaimed by veterinarians and behaviorists around the world and won Becker's Best in Show at the Global Pet Expo in 2012. Get one for your cats or dogs today at your local store or online at AIKIOU.com. That's AIKIOU.com.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike toe leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
Now, my next question I had for you both is a cat question, and it's a little complicated, but this is Sarah. She's in the United Kingdom. And she has a 9-year-old cat named Molly. She's spayed. She had all her standard vaccinations as a kitten. She went away last week, and when she got back, her cat started to vomit every time she ate anything. And it went from a small amount to eating almost nothing in days, and she's now breathing heavily. I took her to the vets, and they found she had fluid around her lungs. He, you know, removed some of the fluid and did some x-rays, but couldn't be definitive of the reason. So he gave her antibiotics and a course of diuretics. And the prognosis is that if she responds to that, it could be something they could treat. If not, then she doesn't know what they could do. He thinks it's most likely a tumor or some cat disease. She can't remember which one he said, but she never goes outside. So Sarah is not sure how she would get that. And so she's concerned and wonders if there's anything she can do. They said any further investigation would be very, very expensive and likely not going to have an outcome that can be fixed. So she doesn't know what to do. Any advice for Sarah and poor Molly?
Aww. Well, certainly it sounds like they took x-rays if the fluids were obscuring the view of the heart on the initial set of radiographs. Then once the cat's been started on Lasix, which would be the diuretic, of course, used to relieve the fluid burden on the heart in the lungs, then taking another x-ray should reveal whether or not there is a mass or an enlargement, if you will, of the heart. Taking a simple set of blood tests doesn't cost a fortune, but would be very informative as far as, for example, thyroid and kidney status, if you will. Heart disease in cats is not uncommon. Certainly, primary hypertrophic cardiomyopathy is caused by a genetic mutation in the heart muscle of certain kitty breeds, in particular Maine Coons and American Shorthairs. That usually affects cats anywhere between 2 and 5 years of age. However, secondary hypertrophic cardiomyopathy can result as a consequence from hypertension or high blood pressure, hyperthyroidism or an overactive thyroid gland, as well as chronic or long-term kidney disease. In these cases, when the primary problem is corrected, again, which would be revealed by taking a blood pressure and running a set of blood tests, the primary problem, which in this case, if it is the hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, usually resolves. Historically, cardiomyopathy was caused by taurine-deficient diets, usually cats being fed dog food in the past, but now today that's been corrected so that taurine is added, and that would be a very rare cause of this particular situation, assuming that the cat does have heart disease, but we don't know the kitty's age, so it's just kind of an educated
guess. She's nine years old.
What would have been very useful, and maybe her veterinarian did indeed do it, but if he did remove some of the fluid, what would have been of paramount importance would have been to examine the fluid.
Yes.
A cytology, a good pathologist can identify cells. Also, the chemical makeup of the fluid is extremely useful in determining what's causing it. And there are some kitty diseases that would need to be ruled ruled out as a matter of routine. Feline infectious peritonitis, feline leukemia, these can be ruled out with fairly inexpensive blood tests, some of which can even be run right there in the office. So these are basic things to rule out. And then again, once, as Dr. Osborne said, once the flu is removed, the repeated chest x-ray should show if there's any masses or abnormalities either in the heart or the circulatory vessels or, mass in the lungs. So I wouldn't give up hope on the cat yet, but it's going to require some more investigation to really get to the bottom of it, because unless you can find out why the kitty's lungs filled up with fluid, you really don't know how to treat it other than throwing Lasix at it and hoping for the best.
Yeah, right. That's exactly correct. Certainly things like coenzyme Q10, 10 milligrams added to the meals once daily, is a natural nutrient which helps to support heart function. In a cat like this that doesn't really have an accurate diagnosis, parsley tea can be given in conjunction with the diuretic Lasix in this case to help increase fluid loss from the body. You can just add a few sprigs of parsley to boiling water, let it steep for about 10 minutes, strain it and allow it to cool, and then just pour about one tablespoon, which is 15 mLs of the tea, just right over the kitty's food. Remember, low sodium diets are a must, and your omega-3 fatty acids found in your fish oils or even in your extra virgin olive oil, again, added to the diet, is very useful to help support heart muscle function.
Now, for something completely different, I had a question that Wally, who is in Wisconsin, wanted to ask the vets, both of you. Wally is a gecko owner. He is sometimes a gecko breeder. And his question is, what is the most common preventative thing reptile keepers can do to avoid health issues that you run across that they don't do?
Well,
keep the temperature correct and feed them properly. Two biggest things reptile owners do not do.
Yes, mostly, and what I get, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, mostly because I think people get excited, they buy on impulse, and then they don't realize all the specific needs that a reptile has. Being a cold-blooded animal, temperature is just absolutely of paramount importance.
Yeah, the thing I get on my reptile patients and of course their owners, rather, mostly is cleanliness. When it comes to keeping reptiles, when it comes to reptile husbandry, cleanliness is next to godliness. I tell the clients at least once a week you have to tear down whatever habitat or enclosure or cage you have for them, scrub it out, soap and water, leave it out in the sun to dry, and reassemble it. If you're using indoor-outdoor carpeting in the bottom of the cage or something similar that needs to be scrubbed out and left in the sunlight, branches that they crawl up and down on that they use for climbing purposes, again, need to be scrubbed. The problem with captive reptiles is you're confining them in small spaces, and you're forcing them to, one, live in an environment under stress, which lowers their immune function to begin with. And then on top of that, you're forcing them to live in an environment that very quickly becomes contaminated with bacteria from their own fecal matter, from the fecal matter or foodstuffs that are fed to them. And this is a completely unnatural, stressful situation for them. And bacterial overload in the environment coupled with too much humidity, a lot of people over mist, over water, let water bowls splash, let animals bask in the water bowls, defecate in the water bowls. You're just creating a cesspool of bacteria that you're forcing this animal to live in under stressful conditions. And it's amazing so many of these creatures actually survive, much less not get sick.
I know Wally does these things because he is a good gecko owner, and his gecko was actually pet of the day one day, a very handsome, good-looking gecko. And that's, of course, one way you can tell your gecko is happy is if it has good colors and a nice fat tail. You know, folks, we are going to run out of time for this segment. I have another kitty question coming up in our next segment. And we will be right back with more All Paws Pet Talk, Ask the Vet.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Treat your furry best friend with a Clear Conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan-crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats, nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. Enter the offer code RADIO at checkout and save 20% at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
Our next question is a kitty question, but it is a kitten question. This guy, my fiance and I just rescued 2 twin tuxedo male babies. No age on record, but we're guessing 9 to 10 weeks maybe. And one, Yager, is sucking on the twin Abita's side. I'm wondering if this is normal. I fostered 2 female kittens who suckled on my older cat Harrison's nipples, but never on each other. I'm taking Abita to the vet later today since he never actually passed worms from the dewormer and is having trouble going potty. And I wasn't sure if the sucking or massaging of his side feels so good, so his brother is helping him out. And that's the first question. And the second is, he noticed that Harrison, his older cat, who's a 2-year-old male, instead of grooming the kittens like I thought he was, Harrison lays them down on the ground with them, bites their necks, grabs a tight hold on them, and ferociously kicks them with his back feet. The owner broke it up and separated them into different rooms, but is this normal dominance behavior? He didn't do this with the female fosters, and I don't want anyone to get hurt. This is Harrison's first time of having, you know, 2 little boys around to deal with.
Well, everything you're describing is normal kitten behavior, normal cat behavior. I mean, they do this. The kittens still have suckling reflex, and they're looking for something in the absence of the mama to suckle on, and they will often suckle each other, their feet, their tails, their reproductive parts. They will, you know, put things in their mouth. A lot of cats will develop what we call a wolf fetish. They will suckle on blankets or articles of clothing. Most all of them outgrow this. There are some that it will persist into adulthood, but most of them will eventually stop as they reach maturity. As far as what the bigger cat's doing to the thing, he's playing with them. You know, he's just as you would with a toy, where they'll hold it in their mouth and kick it with their back feet. He's looking at these 2 little kittens here as just little live play toys, and he's doing what cats normally do when they play with them. Again, the behavior probably will stop when the kittens get old enough to be able to resist what he's doing to them.
But to fight back.
as long as he's not doing any serious, he's just playing, he's not doing any serious harm to them. Most cats, puppies, you know, dogs, that's how they learn their social skills, by interacting with one another in their litter environment. And when one animal gets too exuberant, the other one will just simply break off the play period. And that's how they quickly learn what behavior is acceptable, what constitutes play, and what constitutes aggression.
So this isn't necessarily dominance. He's not trying to say, I'm the boss of you. It's play behavior?
Yeah, he's probably doing it because he's bigger and he can. And eventually the kids are going to get big enough where he can't. And then he will either have to fight with them, or he'll just be forced to stop doing that.
Yeah, and the suckling is absolutely a normal kitten behavior. In older cats, it's a type of obsessive compulsive behavior. Sometimes it's over-grooming, referred to as psychogenic alopecia, particularly in your Siamese and Himalayans. Wool chewing, very common, again, in the Siamese and the Burmese. If wool's not available, they'll chew anything, including your upholstery, which can be costly and a little bit frustrated. Sometimes that occurs because the cat was weaned too early, is feeling stressed. Certainly improving the diet, adding roughage, fresh vegetables and herbs, finely chopped, or even consideration of buying an edible plant is a thought. Feline dental chews are also an idea. And for those of you that just can't get your cat to stop nibbling on everything in your home, dabbing certain items in the home that you do not want your cat to chew with a little bit of hot pepper sauce or even a spray of cologne is often helpful to discourage chewing.
And one thing that you can put on fabrics, things, because obviously certain, you know, upholstery and clothing you may not want to put Tabasco sauce on, but Benadryl powder works very well. You can actually pull a little over-the-counter Benadryl capsule apart and just lightly sprinkle or rub the powder into things you don't want the animal to chew on. Benadryl powder is terribly bitter. One of the reasons they put it in the capsule so you don't taste it when you swallow it. And it is relatively harmless. The little bit they'll lick, worst it'll do is make them sleepy, but it will discourage them from chewing.
That's a great tip. Remember, as a last resort, there are alternative therapies. Box homeopathic rescue remedy, just a harmless combination of flowers, certainly a great, safe, natural stress reliever. And for those that are really in a frenzy, as a last resort, talk to your veterinarian. Again, there are psychotropic drugs, including Prozac, that are available for stress relief.
But for now, of course, these are just two little kittens, so hopefully they'll outgrow this behavior, as, you know, even my little brother outgrew some of his annoying behaviors and turned into an okay adult. Now, my next question is, again, one of those things that happens in the spring and summer. Judy in Kentucky, her dog is Laddie. He is a lab mix, and she's now worried about bees. My dog seems obsessed with them now that the bumblebees are out and around the flowers in the garden. I remember when I was a kid, my dog chomped on one and his face got all swollen. And I just know this is going to happen to Laddie. He chomps at them. If he gets stung by a bee, what should I do? And is it the same for wasps?
You know, it is the same. And remember that bee stings are very common in dogs, especially curious puppies that tend to stick their noses in the wrong spots. The most common sign is a big swollen nose. What can you do? Well, you can make a thick paste out of baking soda and water and simply cover the sting. This is very soothing because it helps to neutralize the acid venom. You can keep a little bit of Benadryl on hand. That's an antihistamine. You can give it orally. Check with your vet for the proper dose, but it helps to reduce swelling and pain. You can also rub a drop of witch hazel directly onto the lesions. Most dogs will be absolutely fine. Occasionally, a severe allergic reaction can cause breathing problems occasionally. So monitoring them for the initial first 24 hours is very wise.
Yeah, and the sad thing about these is they never seem to learn their lesson. You know, they will snap at a bee, they'll get stung, and, you know, they'll just go back to doing it. I've had dogs, same thing, that have had multiple snake bites because every time they see a little pygmy rattler, they don't associate the consequence of it with, you know, the immediate bite or the immediate sting. And if they do it once, they're more than likely going to be doing it again, so.
You know, that's a great point, Dr. Camphor, because for everybody getting ready to backpack and hike with their pets, especially those of you that live out west, snake bites are very common. So if you're getting ready to go out and backpack with your dog, make sure that you buy yourself a snake venom kit and make sure you buy the kind that uses suction to remove the venom. If your dog does get bitten by a snake, you want to pick him or her up. You want to keep your dog as quiet as possible because movement promotes blood flow, which then increases the rate at which the venom is absorbed into the body. And for the same reason, you never want to put ice on a snake bite wound. So keep him dry, keep him calm. Use your anti-venom, and if you don't have it, you need to rush to the vet to get a shot of anti-venom.
Okay, you know, folks, we are out of time for this segment. We'll be right back with more All Paws Pet Talk Ask the Vet.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be healthy goo, healthy.
Hey, pet lovers, please listen up. I want to introduce to you Nature's Logic, the most natural full-line pet food ever made, and here's why. Nature's Logic is made with a variety of high-quality proteins, such as beef, chicken, lamb, and venison. You will never find any synthetic vitamins, minerals, or anything else synthetic in Nature's Logic. Only real nutritional foods, such as dried blueberries, apples, carrots, cranberries, spinach, and almonds. Foods loaded with natural vitamins and minerals, as made by nature, not a chemist. Nature's Logic is committed to providing the highest quality and safest nutrition for the furry members of your family. So, folks, here's what I want you to do. Visit the Nature's Logic website at naturslogic.com and find a store near you. Nature's Logic can be found in many independent stores throughout Colorado, New Mexico, and Wyoming. So, do your pets a favor and start feeding them Nature's Logic and treat them to the very best. Nature's Logic is truly 100% natural, the way pet foods should be.
Get in on the fun and the rewards of caring for animals as a professional. Train to be a pet groomer or a veterinary assistant at the Florida Institute of Animal Arts. Turn your love for animals into a lifelong career. There are thousands of jobs in the growing professions of pet groomer and veterinary assistant. We help place graduates. Ask about tuition financing. The Florida Institute of Animal Arts, Winter Park, 407-869-PETS. On the web at myfiaa.com.
Welcome back to All Paws Pet Talk Ask the Vets. Now, I had another question, and this one is from a goat owner, and she is not new to goats, but this is the first year Lily has had baby goats. Her mama goat had twins, one boy and one girl. It's been 9 days since she had the babies. Both mama and baby are doing fine. But today she started bleeding from her vulva. It's dripping on her legs and getting on the babies when they nurse. Is this normal? And should I worry? And she puts in parentheses, okay, I'm a new goat, quote unquote, mommy, and I will worry anyway, but let me know, please.
Well, that would partly depend on what she means by blood. Is this actual fresh blood that's coming out like from a wound, or is this just blood-tinged fluid? And if so, you know, a little bit of blood-tinged fluid up to 9 days post giving birth, it may not be abnormal. If it's fresh blood, I would be a little more concerned. If it's blood-tinged fluid, as long as it's not brownish or smelly or have purulent material in it or flocculent material in it, there may be a little remnant of placenta that was a little late in dissolving. There may be a little bit of residual fluid being expelled from the uterus as it continues to contract. So in the absence of any other signs, what I would suggest you do is monitor the goat's temperature. It's plain old people rectal thermometer. You stick it up the rear end. Should be less than 103, 103 and a half. Anything less than that, and the goat's eating and nursing and the milk's, I wouldn't be too concerned unless it persists for many, many more days.
Dr. Don, I don't really see a lot of goats myself, but I know in dogs and cats, for example, we commonly give a shot of oxytocin to help expel the contents of the uterus, after puppies or kittens have been born. Would that be a similar principle in goats, I assume?
Not 9 days post, I probably
would. Kind of late.
Right away for the oxytocin. And I just had yesterday, we actually unfortunately ended up putting it down, a large Nubian with ringworm. And the owners just decided it was a not very valuable dairy goat, and they just decided the cost of the C-section was not worth the value of the animal. So this is the case, of course, of a farm animal. It wasn't someone's beloved pet. But, yeah, breeding complications in goats, reproductive complications, are not uncommon. But if it's a lot depends on what she means by blood. If it's fresh blood, that would at the very least look in there with a speculum and make sure there's no physical or mechanical injury, something related to the birthing, a scab that may have come loose from a birthing tear. But if it's just a little bit of clear blood-tinged fluid 9 days post-birthing, I would wait and see, assuming the temperature and the goat's attitude and appetite were still normal.
Yeah, I was going to say, making sure that goat has a good appetite. You know, the milk looks good, and the little baby is suckling and thriving. Just, you know, great common sense items to keep an eye on.
That's right. And she is, you know, like a lot of first-time mommies, she's more nervous than someone with more experience would be, and at least she knows that. Okay, now I understand, Dr. Carroll, you had a person who had a question about a diabetic kitty, and I understand it's an older kitty.
Yes, we got a message at Paws University from Lisa, who has a 14-year-old kitty, who within the last year was diagnosed with pancreatitis, chronic kidney failure, and diabetes.
Good gracious.
She has changed his diet from exclusively dry to dry with canned and then all canned. And she's trying to provide him with a higher quality diet, but she has spoken with her veterinarian, and he tells her that she has no feeding option other than a commercial diabetic food, in this case Purina DM. And she's looking for some options and does not feel that this could be the only food alternative available for this kitty. What do you think about that, Dr. Don?
Well, there are, you know, the Kills diets, the Science diets are have competitive products. So does the Royal Canin, which used to be the Innovative diet. There are some other competing prescription diets. In fact, when we have a cat that's on diabetes, we will usually send the owners home with a sample of each of the different three or four brands that are available and let the animal pick the one that it likes the taste of best, because that improves the compliance. If you send him home with a food that the cat won't eat, the owners are less likely to use it. If you give him a choice of, we'll send him home with, you know, three different cans of three different brands and report back to us which one the cat likes, and then they can buy it by the case.
Yeah, you know, and another option for a kitty like this, in my experience, is a homemade diet. You can make your diet 80% meat. Cats are obligate carnivores designed to eat meat, and 20% fiber. So, you know, if it was a three quarters chicken and one quarter alfalfa sprouts or finely grated zucchini, you can put a little, about a fifth of a teaspoon of extra virgin olive oil on that. It improves the smell and the taste, and it's a great source of those essential omega-3 fatty acids as well. You know, one of the things that this cat is a prime example of is the problem with pancreatitis, or your pet starts to vomit and then gets diarrhea. You rush to the vet and they tell you, you know, your pet has pancreatitis. Those repeated bouts of an upset tummy with vomiting and diarrhea, which we classically term pancreatitis, the risk with those being repeated over and over is that the pancreas gets burned out. And when it can no longer function, it's no longer able to make insulin. And that's the time at which we officially become a diabetic and have to start giving insulin. So avoiding, you know, all those fatty treats and meals from the get-go is very helpful, as well as supporting your pet's body with digestive enzymes and probiotics when a diagnosis of pancreatitis is documented, to prevent that issue from becoming diabetes. And another thing that I would like to mention is that Vetsulin, which is a form of insulin made by Merck, was on the market initially in 2004. It had all kinds of stability issues. It was taken off the market in 2011. There was a class action lawsuit for millions of dollars addressing the needs of thousands of dogs that had died, gone into kidney failure, gone blind, and suffered from neurologic disorders as a result of the faulty insulin. Just letting all you pet owners out there know that Vetsulin, believe it or not, was just reapproved by the FDA and is on the market in the United States for dogs and cats. Please keep in mind that to date, as a veterinarian, I have not been aware of or heard of any reports of adverse reaction from diabetic dogs and or cats on human DNA-based insulin. It's inexpensive, it's easy to get, it's available at Walmart at a price that is far lesser than that for Vetsulin, which is porcine or pig-derived insulin. So that's just a little tip for all you pet owners out there.
Yes, we are, believe it or not, docs, we are running out of time. Folks, you have been listening to All Paws Pet Talk, Ask the Vets. And if you have any question for either of our vets or any of our guests or anyone on the show, you can go to our website, which is allpaws, P-A-W-S, pettalk.com, allpawspettalk.com, and there's a form right there on the homepage. And we will be back next week with more All Paws Pet Talk, Ask the Vets.